on a Monday. Wow, it's normally Mullet Monday, but since we are into the holiday season, we are playing Christmas music, but not your ordinary Christmas music. Here is the hypothesis. Tom loves Christmas music so much. Is there any actual Christmas music that Tom will not love? That is the question.
I see. I would propose that we play Blue Christmas all morning because of the game last night.
We're not going to be focusing on that till 11 o'clock.
Okay.
Plus, the other thing is, let me tell you, there's going to be hell to pay if I go downstairs into the basement and there's no free breakfast for me.
That's all right. They conveniently staged free breakfast at 9 o'clock.
And you guess who went in and got some?
Who? Jacob?
See him chewing?
That's why he was late.
I had a couple minutes.
Oh, my God. Brought us some, right, John?
Yeah, actually, I saw him rush in here. Okay, let's see. It is the presentation of evidence. The House Judiciary Committee is holding the impeachment hearing on Monday, and you're going to get lawyers for the Democrat side and the Republican side, and they're going to ask for the presentation of evidence.
Yeah, they've done that. They've been doing that all morning, and it continues.
Yes, that's it. Okay, so Republican counselor says.
The purpose of this hearing, as we understand it, is to discuss whether President Donald J. Trump's conduct fits the definition of a high crime and misdemeanor. It does not. Such that the committee should consider articles of impeachment to remove the president from office, and it should not. This case, in many respects, comes down to 8 lines in a call transcript. Let me say clearly and unequivocally that the answer to that question is no. The record in the Democrats' impeachment inquiry does not show that President Trump abused the power of his office or obstructed Congress. To impeach a president who 63 million people voted for over 8 lines in a call transcript is baloney.
Ooh, he went with the baloney line.
Baloney. Baloney.
The Democrats' impeachment inquiry ignores all of the evidence that does not advance their story. The Democrats' impeachment narrative resolves all ambiguous facts and conflicting evidence in a way that is most unflattering to the president. As you listen to the Democrat presentation later today, I urge you to keep these points in mind. What evidence that has been gathered in the impeachment inquiry paints a different picture. The summary of the July 25th phone call reflects no conditionality or pressure. President Zelensky never vocalized any discomfort or pressure on the call. Contrary to Democrat allegations, President Trump was not asking for a favor that would help his reelection. He was asking for assistance in helping our country move forward from the divisiveness of the Russia collusion investigation.
Are you in here for the Democrats? Here comes your Barry Burke, Tom.
My son, our children, our grandchildren, they will study this moment in history. They will read all of your remarks. They will learn about all of your actions. And that is not a reason to vote for or against impeachment. For that, of course, you must vote your conscience. But that is a reason for us to have a fair debate about what the undisputed facts show. History, future generations will be the judge.
Okay, can I just say something?
Yeah, I like that.
Andrew is eating breakfast in there. This is like, this is Miss Manners 101.
Yeah.
You don't go down into the basement and get breakfast, free breakfast, which I don't know why we're getting it. And you come up and sit in the other room and eat it after Jacob runs in the room and scarfs down a bunch of eggs and sausage as well.
Salt in the wounds.
Tom ate a crappy sandwich this morning and then complained that he ate it and he'd have no room, but then he says, you know what? I don't care. I'll force more free food in. All right.
That's right.
All right. You agree with the Democrat saying, listen.
Well, no. I mean, I think that's – so his point, this is one of the values, I think, of the impeachment hearing. Whether it goes through or not, I think he will be impeached, but I think he won't be convicted. And because of that, they say, is this all big exercise? I think this is for the history books. We are putting into the history books what Donald Trump did, and history will judge even if we aren't sufficient to judge him or the proceedings.
Well, history will always judge through context, right?
Absolutely.
Right. Okay. So then they're saying, you know, right, his point
is,
somebody can read about it, is whether doing the right or the wrong thing. Okay. A counsel, this is David Goldman, refuting the theory, the Ukrainian meddling in the election. He says,
Dr. Fiona Hill, an expert on Russia and President Putin, who served on the National Security Council until July,
testified that the president was told by his own former senior advisors, including his Homeland Security advisor and his former National Security advisor, that the alternative theory that Ukraine had interfered in the election was false. And although no one in the U.S. government knew of any factual support for this theory, it did have one significant supporter, Russian President Vladimir Putin.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So as counsel for the Republicans said, you know, 63 million people voted for the guy. You get a chance to vote again if you don't like him, or you do like him. If you like the fact that the economy is the hottest it's been in 50 years, I say vote for Donald Trump again. 263,000
well,
new jobs included.
You might not have a chance.
What do you mean? You
know,
he's gonna, what do you mean?
Well, I mean, if impeachment succeeded.
The Senate's going to flip 20? The Senate flips 20?
No, but the idea is that. Right now, if the theory is that he is trying to interfere in the 2020 election, you can't just wait till the 2020 election to allow him to interfere and once again, you know, be a suspect president. Mm-hmm. That's the issue, and that's why they have to proceed as now.
The issue is that the Democrats have not one candidate that could beat Donald Trump. This is the only place
that they could beat.
Who?
Oh, well, I think a number of them could.
Who?
I mean, let's go with Joe Biden right now.
Okay, Joe Biden beats Donald Trump.
The polls say that he would. Now, I think he has clay feet, personally.
Yeah.
But I do think that if people, right now, he has 42% approval, Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
55% disapprove. Now, that'll go down when they see who he has to run against. But I think there is a good chance that the Democrats, just about any Democrat, I mean, as long as he has the support of the entire Democratic Party, could beat Donald Trump. I don't know that it will or not. I'm not making a prediction, but I said yes, that I think there were a number of Democrats who could.
Do you think at this rate, Joe Biden, because you chose Joe Biden out of all the others.
Well, just because he's the one leading in the polls.
So he lost in 88. He flames out early. 2008, he bombs out. He's the third coming out of Iowa. He has a track record of zero as being running for president, doing well. Do you think at this point he is gaining in the polls, and then every time we get a chance to see him, we get a chance to hear more interesting things from Joe Biden?
No.
Is it just like anybody but Trump? Is it that kind of okay?
I think it's because usually the second term is a referendum on the president.
Yes.
And if they're not people, after you see 4 years of what Trump can do, good and bad, do you really want to have him a second term? Even people that support Trump think a second term could be even, you know,
oh yeah,
more
then the wheels really come off.
Because he has no checks.
Yeah, yes,
you know
right.
The idea is most. And in fact, we had Medved on here with John when you weren't here a few weeks ago, and he was saying just about every president, you know, even presidents that you love, like Ronald Reagan or Barack Obama, their second term isn't nearly as successful as the first term or as good as the first term. And why is that? It's because they don't have to worry about running for re-election, and so there maybe their worst tendencies come to light. That could be hell on earth if Trump's re-elected.
Yeah, if you liked what happened for the first 4 years, just give me four more.
That's right.
Shama Sawant this is crazy. Did she go to college or has she been hit in the head?
In economics.
Oh my God. Shama Sawant on how other countries have nationwide eviction moratoriums in the winter because housing is a human right. Oh my God. Thank God she won.
In France, nationwide, there's a moratorium on any evictions of renters from November 1st to March 31st. So the idea being housing as a human right. And if housing is a human right, then how can you evict families and people in the middle of winter? The United States, unfortunately, offers a bad contrast to that. There is no such nationwide law. There's no such federal law. And there are virtually no cities that have really any viable laws to make sure that renters are not evicted and thrown out into the streets when it's really cold.
Mm-hmm. How do they get evicted? They got evicted because they weren't paying their rent.
That's right. How does it work in these other countries? That's what I don't understand. If you're a landlord and you're told 4 months of the year you can't evict somebody, you can't get your money for 4 months.
Oh.
How do other countries, if she's right, and this actually is allowed that you can't evict for those 4 months, do they set up more payment early and late to make up for those 4 months? I don't understand how it works. I'd like to see if she actually has concrete evidence that this is working in other countries. I wonder how they do it, because it feels unfair to the landlord that for 4 months he not only can't evict, he can't get any payment from somebody who would pay.
Right. So if you're a smart tenant, you will stop paying in August. So you screw them in August, and then you go September, October, November. Then you're going to get into it. So you will actually be able to spread that out much further than 4 months. Maybe France has a fund where if you do that and you decide you want to squat and steal from the landlord for 4 months,
Maybe
the landlord is compensating. Okay. Well, maybe there's something in there. But this is just
needed.
This is just the people who take advantage of this thing right out of the gate. She says, on why we need this, it's because people are dying.
National Coalition for Homelessness estimates that 700 people experiencing homelessness die annually from the effects of hypothermia in U.S. cities. This is a damning.
The second part of that, which she's not talking about, is the fact that hypothermia plus it's alcohol. They are dying from a combination of the two. It's exposure plus alcohol and drugs is a contributing factor. It's just not flat out hypothermia. But anyway.
Statistic for the wealthiest country in the history of humanity, for hundreds of people to be dying every winter simply because the law does not protect them from being evicted and being made homeless.
Okay. So what does she want to do exactly, Tom?
The legislation will amend the city's existing Just Cause Protections Ordinance and make sure that the city's code is changed so that renters are not evicted anytime between November 1st and March 31st.
Yeah, okay. I mean, even you see the fact that people would take advantage of this, right?
Yeah, well, the thing is, I want to make sure that the landlord is not taken advantage of. I'm very sympathetic to people that are poor, that are homeless, that are facing eviction. I like the fact, for instance, that the city decided that the tiny homes village in North Seattle, they were going to shut down on December 1st. They said, let's wait till March where the weather conditions are a little more amenable. I like the idea that we're acknowledging that, but it doesn't make economic sense. You can't justify what you're doing unless there is a compensation. In other words, if Seattleites decided, okay, for 4 months out of the year during the winter months or the worst months, we are going to compensate the landlords and basically make it a handout for the people that are in their homes that they're not evicted until March 1st, then I'd be a little more accommodating to it. It's an aspirational idea that I think she's promulgating. Now, she's offering specific legislation. I don't think this is going to go anywhere. But the idea is most of us have a heart and don't want to kick people out into the cold.
I'm sure the landlord doesn't want to kick the person out into
That's
the cold
right,
either. So what you're basically saying is that rather than – so the relationship in the contract, which is the lease – is basically meaningless because the person decides when they want to pay, when they don't want to pay. So then the onus in order to make the landlord whole becomes the taxpayer's responsibility. So we take more money from the producers and we give it to a landlord because we have people that are not filling their responsibility of paying the rent.
That's right. It's charity. I agree. And we would have
But it's not charity. Charity is where you make a choice.
Then.
It's not charitable. It's where you make a personal choice as to where you want to put the money. This is compulsory. This is the government taking it from you. That's not charity. The government takes it. No, we are not the government.
The government
takes it from you and gives it to the landlord. So that's the difference. It's not charity. You believe that the government is somehow involved in charity. That's close to Marxism, where you believe that we're going to take money from one group of people, give it to another group of people, and we're going to feel good about it, that's charity. That is force of government.
If we do it ourselves, we would vote in the city of Seattle. We would vote, or our representatives would vote, to do that or not. How do we want to spend our money, our taxes? And that is a decision. Now, it might be more humanitarian than any one of us can actually acknowledge, but that's the idea. It's not repression if we decide to tax ourselves to do this. But I agree, it messes with the economic model. The only way you can justify this is if you have to establish that housing is somehow independent of the normal run of the capitalist system, which is, a demand-based situation. This is, if you see it as a human right, which is the philosophical argument, then they have to play by different rules than if you're making widgets.
No, it's not a philosophical, it's a myth argument. The idea that a human right is something that is actually a commodity, that a building is a human right, that a piece of fruit is a human right, that a medicine is a human right. These are actual physical things that have been produced by someone or are owned by someone. And when you say it is the right of the individual to take that from that other person, either has the banana, the injection of the medicine, or the building itself, and give it or have it taken from them and given to this other person because they have a right to it, well, that's nonsense world. You can't live in that world. Then we start to determine, well, transportation's a human right. Okay, then that car made by these individuals is now your car because you have a right to transportation.
That's why you have to be very conservative about what you determine are rights.
No, I'll tell you what rights are. Rights are, Tom, you have the right to speak. You have the right to listen.
Why?
You have the right to
why
be
free. Why do I have it? In some countries, I don't.
No, in the United States, we have inalienable rights that were given to us by, so you have a right, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's it. That's all you get.
But how did we determine that? We determined that by a vote. The vote was, you know, whether we approved the Constitution or not in the Bill of Rights. So it's a vote. So we are voting to, in effect, give up our, you know, money to whatever causes we've decided were worthwhile.
Now,
we would defend the right to speech even if it's somebody who says something terrible against us.
But
that is the determination that we did by a vote, those rights.
You can go back to the Magna Carta when they first actually recognized the individual as actually having rights given by God, not by the king. So the individual then has these rights, which don't cost anybody anything. You have the right, life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Go ahead. You've got those. They're given to you. You can do what you want with them. But it doesn't cost me anything for you to pursue life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
If I insulted you, it could cost you.
No, you do it all the time. It doesn't cost me anything. The only thing costs me right now is the fact there's free breakfast occurring right now downstairs. And you and I,
every day,
here's what I'm going to do. I am going to run downstairs as a gesture of goodness and kindness.
And bring me something?
What would you like?
Lots of bacon. I don't know what's down there.
No, you want a smorgasbord?
Yeah, I'll get it. Yeah. One of everything.
Is it smorgasbord or is it smorgasbord?
Okay, you know, we're doing a radio show.
It is
Borg?
Over here.
Smorgasbord. Yes. There's a G in it, but it's not at the end.
Smorgasbord does sound like a very random robot.
All right. Let's see. Stuff we still need to get to. Two fun stories on why kids are so obsessed with garbage trucks. And there is a. Do me a favor, Jacob, I can't remember your name. Look up Young Boy's Love for Garbage Man on YouTube, which is going to help highlight this story.
Here's some good Christmas music.
Wait a minute, are you telling me this is bad Christmas music?
Give it some time.
Oh, maybe it's not.
Wheels are falling off right now here. Something's going wrong.
I find most of these hilarious. This is Crazy Frog.
Again, testing the theory, Tom said he loves all Christmas music. Tom?
I like it in context.
All right. It is Monday, and to give Warm 106.9 a run for their money when they play Christmas music, decided we'll do that on Monday. And just took small little bites out of their huge
things you won't hear on that
rating.
Station.
Let me tell you, they get pretty desperate. They might be running that.
Yeah?
Yeah. By the way, Kiel Mortgage, 1-888-778-KIEL for all your mortgage needs. Couldn't do a better job than calling 1-888-778-KIEL. Let them know exactly what you need, and they'll work you through what can be a complicated and stressful process. It is the best. Laura Kiel and her friends over there. That's good. Okay, let's see. There is a piece that was 2015. I saw this. 2-year-old boy has a special bond, and his best friend. Who his best friend is. You ready, Tom?
I'm ready.
Cutest little kid.
Who is your best friend?
O.D.
O.D.? Is he way down there?
Yeah.
Will he come back this way?
Yeah.
And O.D. is the garbage man. And he stands out front of the house as O.D. drives up in the garbage truck every Thursday. And this particular day is the saddest day because the kid doesn't realize it, but they're moving out of the house. So he's not going to be on OD's route anymore.
Oh, wow.
And as OD gets off the back of the truck, the kid runs up and hands him this package. And OD picks him up and hugs him. And the mother says, you are his best friend. You are his absolute best friend. And here's a sweet moment as he gets off the truck.
OD coming.
Here he comes. Good, how are you?
What's up, man?
I'm gonna collect our garbage.
Collect our garbage.
There you go.
One, two, three.
And you're always so make time for a little buddy.
Picks him up, gives him a big hug.
Oh, so sweet.
Hey, boy, you have it, man.
I know. Yeah, he is.
You have it, boy.
Did you know how much this boy loves you?
I didn't know, but I can see.
The reason it's a goodbye party.
And then they're leaving the neighborhood. This article, fascinating piece as to why people, especially little kids.
Why your kid loves the garbage truck so much.
Yeah.
And a lot of this, one particular journalist decided to talk to all sorts of different people. So he talked to garbage truck drivers, and he talked to parents, and he talked to kids, and he talked to child psychologists to get sort of this wide range. And they said a couple of things I thought was pretty interesting about routine. They say that, you know, when you're two and you're three, the idea that you wore snow pants when you were two and then you're putting on snow pants when you're three, it's like that never existed. A three-year-old doesn't remember as far back as when he was two to put on snow. So snow is like this unbelievable thing to him, including putting on the snow pants and all this, that they have no memory. Well, the one thing that kids do have memory is something that happens on a regular basis. So there's something routine about it that they can – it's something that they know. It gives them a sense of familiarity about the world, and it's something that they can anticipate. 6 days later, he's going to, you know, be coming around the bend the following morning. So that sense of familiarity and that sense of expectation is there. Secondly, they say – what do kids like to do more than just about anything? Well, that is dump things out. They're always, parents are always, don't be making a mess there. And so the kids love that. And so here is a profession that basically gets to dump things out. And they get to do it. It's their, they say for a lot of kids, that's like their dream job. So those are some of the arguments they like. The other thing they throw, this I'm not quite as convinced of, but it's that kids like, they talk to a guy who has this show called The Stinky and Dirty Show.
Yeah.
And it's kids love anything that stinks or that's dirt.
Yeah.
They laugh, they scream, and since garbage is kind of be stinky and dirty, they revel in that. Now, see, I don't think of garbage as stinky. The kind of stuff, since we have garbage disposals and we have, you know, things where we put the kind of the messy stuff, I don't, to me personally, as a kid, I never thought of garbage as being stinky, but he says that apparently is one of the
things. Tom, when the thing crushes and then all that juice and stuff comes out the back.
Does it smell, though? I mean, we're far enough away from the garbage truck to not smell that. And by the way, you're supposed to be at least 20 feet away from a garbage
man. I'm telling you something right now. Joey the garbage man is pulling over to write
us. No, but he admitted to us he's really a recycler. So there's not stinkiness with recycling. And then the idea is they're visually so fascinating. There are no machines. That's a very distinctive kind of machine that does what it does. The side loader and how, you know, when it puts out its front arms to pick up the dumpster. There's nothing like it that moves like that. And so kids can anthropomorphize that, see it as like an animal. Imagine a big zoo animal coming to your house every day to interact. And then finally the article ends with, I decided I was going to ask a kid, what does a kid like most about it? And you know what a kid likes most about it?
What?
Waiting for the truck driver to say hi. Yeah. But to them, it's like, that's interesting how you open the entire segment. The most important thing for a kid when it comes to you know, garbage trucks, basically, is that they get to say hi and the guy waves back,
yes,
or the woman waves back for all we know. The idea is that human interaction, that kids don't have a huge world of you know, outside their family. And so it's a contact with the outside world and they develop a friendship for it. And from a kid's point of view, it's not how stinky or smelly it is. It's not how easy and fun it is to dump things out. It's a human touch that wins the day.
And the person's coming on a weekly basis.
That's right. Yeah. Right. The familiarity. And so they get to know that person over and over and over again.
Yeah, I could see that. I didn't develop a strong relationship with my garbage man. Did
no,
you?
No, never. No. But I was fascinated by the garbage truck. Uh-huh. To me, the most interesting thing is not the dumping out. It's the squishing in. It's like, wow, all that stuff. You just dump it and then they just push it back. I can imagine. I think there's a scene in one of the Toy Story things where they're in one of these chutes that's going to be, you know, dumped in a dump, and they're going to get all burned. Mm-hmm. All that. I think if a kid had any contact with what happens to the garbage once it gets swooped in, they'd have nightmares instead of, you know, dream jobs. The other cute thing in this story is they ask, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" He says, "I want to be a garbage truck." "Oh, you want to be a garbage truck driver?" "No, I want to be the garbage truck itself."
I tell you, I have grown to have a love-hate relationship with the garbage collectors in the neighborhood.
Okay, why is that?
Because I don't want to be judged. First of all, I'm not big on this whole recycling thing. It's a waste of time and money. Okay. So I don't want an oops thing in my garbage thing. Like, oops, looks like you forgot about the styrofoam. And then,
I never get those, John.
No, you don't.
Maybe you're not doing something right.
Well, you don't probably don't have as much junk as I do. Plus, also, you don't do the garbage. Your wife does the garbage.
No, it's not true.
Your wife, you take it out to the curb?
Of course I do.
And you do the whole recycling thing?
That's the man's
job. Oh, so if I were to find a pizza box, you're telling me there's no crust, no nothing. It's all been cleaned out.
No, what do you mean? There, you have
cheese. Is there cheese? Let me ask you this.
Food
is
and
there
waste in the box. And that's allowed because it's the food and waste box. You put your pizza boxes in the food and waste box.
Oh, you have a third box?
Yeah, you have three.
No, you
don't.
You
have recycling.
You barely have two. That's the way I look at it.
Now we know why you've been doing it wrong. You lost. There's a green can, there's a blue can, and there's a black can.
Here's what the blue can's job is. If the green can is full, the blue can steps in, and they get these oops things. And now they do this thing. They don't even bother putting oops in there anymore. You know what they do? They just don't pick it up. It's like, oh, please, really? Oh, you're so high and mighty. Oh, I'm sorry. I've got some styrofoam things in there. Oh, like the world's a... You are determining that, your stuff doesn't get a chance to go to the dump. Not good enough. Tom, we'll take that with the three separate
boxes.
Who's got time for that?
I play by the rules.
Oh, my God.
You're like a two-year-old. What do you mean? It's just garbage. Throw it out.
Here's what I love to do. I like to take house paint, okay? And I don't put kitty litter in it. I just put it in a great big heavy-duty green industrial bag, and I tie a nice big knot in it and throw that right in there. There's a little something for you.
Oh,
you're like park detective, park garbage man. Oh, you're going
to
give me the oops
thing?
You have
to take your paint to paint places.
Oh, do you really?
Or you drop it off.
I'll tell you, we take it to the end
hazardous
of the driveway.
You are the worst.
I love fooling them.
I hope waste management's
listening.
You're so
good at what you do, garbage man.
Just like the ones I used to know.
It's almost too easy to go with Shatner.
Yeah, with the treetops glisten. And the children listen.
Children,
to hear sleigh bells in the snow.
Oh, he loves his own voice, doesn't he?
Oh, yes.
I'm dreaming of a white
Judy Collins.
Christmas.
Judy Collins?
Is singing that?
With every Christmas card.
She's not in the studio with him. No. Who knows?
He made this recording 10 years ago, then he just messed all over it.
Why isn't he jumping in? Is he unconscious from alcohol?
He's coming back.
Okay.
And may all be white.
Nice.
Be white.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh.
Hey,
jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. We're dashing through the snow in a one-horse open sleigh. All the fields we go, laughing all the way. Bells on bobtail ring, making spirits bright. Oh, what fun it is to sing a sleighing song tonight. Oh, jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Hey, jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh.
You know, she's probably really proud of herself.
I love this scene. Then it slows down. And then it picks up.
They can't all be cringy. But there are plenty of cringe-worthy ones coming up.
Okay, thank you for that. It'll make people stick around. Let's see. It's a 10-year study on sleep, and the U.S. military just reveals something eye-opening about caffeine. Now, when it comes to sleep studies, the fact that some people will do it will be done in 3 months or 2 months, and then a lot of peer review comes in and kicks giant holes in it. So the U.S. military spends, I don't know how much money, and 10 years. And they were finding out about sleep deprivation over a 60-hour period, right? Then they started to look at how many hours can you go, what would be the best effect of caffeine to keep you sort of at a particular level. And now finally we know how much caffeine and where we should get the caffeine.
But even before that, this is, I think, I find disturbing. 40% of servicemen and women. Mm-hmm. 40% get 5 hours or less a night. Okay. And that is when they're home, not in a, you know, a theater, you know, a war theater. This idea that we are constantly deprived of sleep, our servicemen and women, I think is shocking. And so in order to compensate for that, we don't get them more sleep. We just get them more coffee. And so the results of this 10-year study says that if you have to get by on 5 hours of sleep, and again, at least 40% of us do in the military, do when we're not stationed overseas, they suggest consuming 2 cups of weak coffee when you wake up, followed by another 2 cups 4 hours later.
Mm-hmm.
If you get reasonable amounts of sleep, that means more than 5 hours, but you're working an overnight shift, what we all know is hard on you, it's best to drink a quick 2 cups of weak coffee right at the start of your shift. And finally, if you're expecting you won't be able to sleep much at all for more than a day or two for whatever reasons, 2 cups of coffee at midnight, 4 a.m., and at 8 a.m. And the reason that why weak coffee, that makes no sense to say weak coffee, it's important that you get the maximum benefit out. Total caffeine in your bloodstream doesn't exceed a threshold of 400 milligrams at any one time. That is considered bad for the system. They don't explain the science behind it, but you have to keep it below. So the idea is you can drink extra cups of coffee, but they should be weak coffee because you want to, you know, you don't want to have a bull rush of caffeine. That also is wearing on you.
Well, don't you think when you look at residents in a hospital that are going around doing those that grueling 1 year or 2 years, those guys are running.
Oh, you mean residents?
Residents are running on very little sleep.
Yeah. And I know.
And they're making life and death decisions. And they're calling upon like years of schooling, and they're standing over somebody with a sucking chest wound, and they've been up for 22 hours.
I know. It makes absolutely no sense to me. But coffee, they do say coffee is good for you, and it does keep you alert. But I would think in the long run, it would just wear you down. But
yeah, so anyway, give everybody what they're supposed to do. They do 2 cups when you first wake up.
Yeah, and then 2 cups 4 hours later. And by the way, they said, but every individual body is different. And so they are now coming up with a personal one-on-one algorithm that'll tell you specifically what you need. These are just the average responses, but they say that's proprietary information, and the military is going to try to figure out a way to monetize it for them before they give you that.
You drive into this neighborhood in Magnolia, and there's a camera, and they do warn you that it's taking video of your car, and it's all part of AI, and AI is not biased, so don't worry about it, everybody. They're just collecting data.
They know the way you talk and walk.